So I'm going to talk to you about a study we are doing for the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluation, the Office of the ASPE. I have no financial relationships to disclose. And my other disclaimer is that the presentation is mine. It's my opinion, not ASPE's. They like for me to say that because they're not quite sure what's going to come out of my mouth, I think. But that's okay. So this was a study that they funded, but what you're going to hear is the findings, and they may or may not reflect their views. The focus of this project was really to assess the scope of the impact of the Affordable Care Act on state and local public health programs, to look at how expanded insurance coverage and enhanced benefits may change how individuals seek care and where those services are provided, and to examine the potential changes to the public health programs as a result. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the study, and then I want to get into some of the context and findings. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on some of the background for the study, but just to let you know a little bit about how we approached this. We worked very closely and continue to work very closely with the technical advisory group. It's really an iterative, a collaborative project where we convene that group. They talk to us about the research questions, states where they think we're going to get some good information. We go out, we do site visits to those states, bring that information back to the advisory group. They help us analyze those findings, and we kind of continue from there in a very iterative way. And it's been a fun collaboration, a really nice way to do this project. These are the states that we have and have visited in year one and year two. We still have two more states to go. We are hoping to do site visits in North Carolina and Vermont. We're currently talking to those states. Just to give you a sense, again, of the states, we really wanted to get a diverse set of states, states that were both expanding Medicaid and those that weren't, but also states that were diverse in terms of structure, governance, population size, and then states that had unique features, highly rural states, states with tribal populations. A lot of unique features across these states. I will say, and I think we did a pretty good job of getting a diverse set, the one area where we struggled was getting states that were non-expansion states. Particularly in that first year, we were talking to states about the Affordable Care Act as the Affordable Care Act was being rolled out. As you may recall, that didn't go so smoothly. And even expansion states did not want to talk to us about the Affordable Care Act. We had a lot of states hanging up on us. And that was okay. So the reason I say that is I want to give kudos to these states because they had leadership that was very courageous in being willing to talk to us. The other thing which is important here was that ASPE agreed that we could provide the reports back to the states before ASPE ever saw them to make sure that the states could both verify the information and make sure there was just nothing in there that they weren't comfortable with. And I think that was some of the ways that we were eventually able to get that agreement. These are the states we've visited in this second year. Some of them have been very recent. We were in Oklahoma last month. And again, just to provide some context. So The Affordable Care Act is really about improving public health via the healthcare delivery system, and I think this is a really important point. ACA was about healthcare delivery. It sought to impact the public's health, but it was through the clinical setting. Public health was a little bit of an afterthought, and I think that was really the genesis for this study, was that as we were really focused on how do we improve things on the healthcare side, I think at some moment there was this thought of going, oh, wow, you know, some of this may have impacts on health departments that we didn't really think about. Let's start thinking about that and figure out what that is so that we can mitigate those impacts and also help health departments leverage opportunities. That was really the genesis of this study. Here's kind of the context, the way I think about it. There are a number of programs, many of them at CDC, but also at other federal agencies, that were funded. These are the categorical grant fundings, the stovepipe funding that everyone talks about. These were programs that were funded because they were deemed so important to the public's health that even people without insurance should have those. And I'm thinking about clinical services like immunization. We want to make sure everyone is immunized. Breast and cervical cancer screening, STD testing. There are a whole array of these services. So these were clinical services that public health provided because they were so important that even people without insurance should have access. Well, now, a lot of people, because of expanded Medicaid, in the marketplace, now have access to these services. Presumably, they have insurance. They may not have access. That's a different issue. But they're able to access, potentially, these services through the clinical setting. And, in fact, a lot of health departments have seen their volume decline for those services. So it starts to raise questions. Should these be funded programs? Should we continue funding this? Do the programs need to change? So these are the kinds of things we're exploring. So that's a little bit of the context about this. So what does it mean to the state and local public health system? What does it mean for public health financing? That's a lot of revenue for our health departments. And then does it have any other impacts, secondary impacts perhaps, that we weren't anticipating? This says a lot of the same thing. It's really this bottom part. What are the implications of this shift? Will CDC continue to fund these programs? Will health departments start to become providers of these services? So will they bill for these services? If that funding goes away on the CDC side, are they going to become billable services on the clinical side? And then will this vary? Do the opportunities vary based on Medicaid expansion status? So if you're expanding Medicaid, potentially your volume is going to decline faster. On the flip side, potentially there's more potential revenue through billing. So a lot of strategic decisions that health departments have to make as a result of this. So the way I look at this is the public health is at a crossroad, and we are already seeing health departments really go in two different directions here. And they're really the directions I just described, at least one of them is. So they can expand clinical preventive services. So this may be particularly true in provider shortage areas. So again, the Affordable Care Act and states that expanded Medicaid, a lot more people have insurance. That doesn't mean there are more providers, particularly in our rural communities. So we may have increased demand, but not increased access to meet that demand. So health departments may be able to come in and fill that niche, may be an opportunity. But it's a heavy lift. Health departments now have to bill for those services. They have to have billing systems in place. They have to change their accounting practices. A lot of people don't think about that, but that's huge. Instead of getting a grant at the beginning of the year and doling out your $500,000 grant, now you have to project revenue. You have to have accounting systems so that you can match your revenues to your expenses. You have to have cash on hand to pay bills until things are paid. Changes the way health departments operate, and the way that is often stated is that health departments need to start acting like a business, and that's not what a lot of health departments want to do, not what a lot of health department staff want to do. So, one opportunity may be, one direction health departments may want to go is to expand services. The flip side is that there are a lot of health departments who say, hey, look, this is a great time for us to get out of the business of doing clinical services. IOM's 1988 report said we shouldn't be doing this anyway. Now other people are filling this gap. We can get out of providing the service. We may be able to contract some of those services if it's a CDC-funded thing, and we may be able to refocus on our core public health activities. So that's the other direction that health departments can go. I will tell you, here is my concern. I am worried that health departments are going to make one decision or the other based on geography. I think our rural health departments may be pushed into providing more services because of the demand, and our urban health departments may divest themselves of the services because they can. They have a sufficient local tax base and a wealth of providers who can provide that service. I want us to start thinking about the implications of that. What happens when we have two divergent public health systems, one that is heavily engaged in clinical care, one that is not? Things like accreditation, where we aren't including the clinical side. I think, you know, that how we start to structurally look at health departments, I think, is going to be impacted by some of those decisions. So this, I think, has really broad impacts for the field of public health. So I want to go through some of the specific findings from the case studies. We heard a lot from the health departments about their concerns about support from both the federal government and states. They are worried that funds will be cut. They have seen declines in their programs. They're worried that the dollars will be cut. What I can tell you is that the dollars are not being cut for most programs, but there are concerns that they will. It's a little harder to justify programs if your volume is declining. Billing for services, all of the states are expanding billing, but it is a heavy lift. I mentioned a lot of that already. Three of the states said, and I thought this was really, really important, and I say three because that was in the first round, so three of the five in the first round. They noted that reimbursement doesn't cover the cost of the health department providing the service. So they said basically, health departments are providing this service and billing for it because the providers aren't willing to provide the service and bill for it because it's a money loser. So we feel like we have to fill that gap, but it still doesn't pay the bills, so we still need some other source of funding to cover that difference. So again, even when you're billing, you may not actually be paying, you may not be getting sufficient revenue. They noted that a lot of services that health departments do aren't amenable to billing. So even if they're going to expand billing, it's not the full answer because you still need to do things like health education, contact tracing, a lot of things like that. And again, I talked about some of this. It changes the way that health departments do business. This is one of the quotes. I won't read it all to you, but you see the last part of it, we're becoming more business-oriented. This is stated as a concern by many health departments. And part of that concern is in recruiting their staff. They're worried that their staff, a lot of people go into public health because they don't want to have to ask about insurance status. They want to serve vulnerable populations. And if you're going to have to do that anyway, why not go on the clinical care side and make a little bit more money? So that's one of the things we hear about. I put this up here. So this is from the NATO Forces of Change study, their survey. This was a survey of all the health departments. And I put this up here because it's really interesting. Almost every health department is billing for services and plans to expand billing further. So this is the reality of public health today. Now, this isn't all services, but they're billing for some services. Immunization being the one that they're billing for the most, but they're billing for other services as well. So the future role of health departments in providing clinical services, there are some services that health departments are going to continue to need to provide regardless of whether it is a covered service, things like STD, because of confidentiality. Now, because they need to provide it doesn't mean it's going to continue to be easy to provide it when your volume's going down. Maintaining the staff, maintaining the capacity, the clinical capacity as your volume is going down is becoming an issue even in things like STD. So huge issues ahead of public health. Insurance coverage doesn't equate to access, so we've heard, again, in those rural areas that health departments may need to expand those services. And again, I put at the bottom here is what I already mentioned. This may further this rural-urban public health divide, and that's one of those things that really intrigues me, concerns me. Secondary impacts, so the example here, if you are reducing things like, for example, immunization services, you have fewer public health nurses, then pandemic flu comes around and you need to do a mass immunization. How do you do it when you have less capacity? So there are potential cascading effects of reductions in the clinical care by having fewer clinical staff. It may affect disease outbreak and surveillance, things like that. Sustainability of the key public health services. So the analogy I use here is a game of Jenga. So each time you pull out a public health service, all of that contributes to having a robust public health infrastructure. So each time you pull one of those out, you slowly destabilize that infrastructure. So it may not seem like a substantial service, but if you keep pulling these away, at some point, you're not going to be able to provide the important things like disease surveillance, like a lot of those core public health activities. So again, destabilizing that broader public health infrastructure, I think, is a concern. There are opportunities, so I don't want to just be negative here. There are opportunities in the Affordable Care Act for health departments. Many health departments are looking at contracting with providers. They're participating in ACOs, although the experience has been a little bit of a mixed bag, and we actually got some specific information on that, which is fascinating. Things like, you know, just as an example, the idea of an ACO is shared risk. Well, a lot of ACOs have told health departments, well, you're a government agency. You don't have to assume risk. So how can you be a partner? So it's not always an easy negotiation. But some health departments are very successfully participating. So that's a potential opportunity. Billing for services, I already mentioned. Redefining the role of public health and how the health department contributes to the community. So new roles for public health, and a lot of health departments are really exploring that. And then participating in the community health assessments and the community health improvement plans, particularly through the nonprofit hospital requirements within the Affordable Care Act. And then this is the last slide, and this, to me, I put this up because this one really surprised me a little bit, and I'll kind of tell you what I look at and what I see here. So this is also from the NATO Forces of Change survey. And this is the percent of health departments that expanded services. The pink is health departments expanding services. The blue is health departments reducing services. And what was really interesting to me was that for most services, and relatively equal number of health departments are expanding and reducing. And I kind of look at this in the context of that rural-urban divide, where we're seeing health departments starting to move in divergent paths. So looking at maternal and child health services, 14% of health departments are increasing maternal and child health services, 14% are decreasing it. So some are increasing, some are decreasing. Other personal health services, 14% are reducing, 10% are increasing. Emergency preparedness, 9% reducing, 11% increasing. Really across the board. So again, I think it's kind of fascinating. And I think that's it.
That's it.
All right. Thank you.